and I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down the wheel of life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fight beside me.
When you're running down my country, you're walking down the fight inside of me. That's the name of this program here, lightresistanceradio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European Heartland. Well, here's a brief news item from today's National Post. Ottawa apologizes for killing Inuit sled dogs. Those are Eskimos, incidentally. The Canadian government seems, it's almost an apology a day. Now, there are definitely things the Canadian government ought to be apologizing for, but this is probably, this almost is the amounts of the trivial. The Canadian government has apologized for the killing of thousands of sled dogs decades ago. Crown Indigenous, that's Indian, Relations Minister Carolyn Bennett delivered the apology in Iqaluit, that used to be Frobisher Bay up on Baffin Island. She said the government made a mistake by assuming it knew what was best for the Eskimo people. Between 1950 and 1975, Eskimos in Nunavut's Baffin region were moved from mobile camps to permanent communities. Sled dogs proved a hazard in the communities, and the government required owners to muzzle and chain the animals. An inquiry report in 2010 found that it became easier for authorities to shoot the dogs instead. We have and will learn from these great errors, Bennett said. We are committed to ensuring our future is different from our past. We apologize. It's, yeah, pathetic. Pathetic. Now, let's just listen to what it is this silly dingbat is apologizing for. When the Eskimos were moved from mobile camps to permanent communities, and many of them now live in places like Iqaluit, or used to be Frobisher Bay. Okay, sled dogs became a hazard. They in case you really just didn't need them anymore. And so the government required the owners to chain and muzzle them, so they weren't running loose, and then at times the government simply shot the dogs. Okay, they're apologizing. What for?
What for?
You know, good point. I'm not a great fan of Hollywood gossip and so on, but here we are. Something that I'm sure you absolutely wanted to know. Bored in bed. Sexually fluid Miley Cyrus, that is, needed more than what Liam, that's her relatively new husband, could offer. Miley Cyrus clearly can't be tamed, at least not by Liam Hemsworth. RadarOnline.com can reveal that the Wrecking Ball, that's her new album, singer, wasn't satisfied in the sack with her husband for months, leading to their recent split. She was bored in her marriage and she was bored in bed with Liam, a source closer, the sexually fluid Cyrus, said, you'll have to hang on a sec if sexually fluid does not immediately ring a bell with you. The informant revealed the singer told her hunky actor husband many times how she felt. And while he was willing to change things up by bringing in another partner, the source said Cyrus, who said she's attracted to women, needed more than that. She really did try her best to fit in the role of wife. Now, Miley Cyrus has now described herself as gender fluid. Now, that actually sounds like something that might require a Kleenex to mop up, but apparently it means you're so badly messed up that I can't figure out whether she likes men or, men or girls. Miley Cyrus is a truly a disgusting piece of work. I probably wouldn't waste even 2 minutes of this program on her, were it not for the fact that Miley Cyrus, way back, was Hannah Montana, which was a fairly wholesome show aimed at young people. So, you know, there was a time. Okay. Well, as she became a late teenager and then an adult, she wanted more. She wanted to be a star in her own right, and get out from the Hannah Montana image. One might say fair enough. So what she has become is actually, and I don't want to use too many vulgar words, but she really has become something of a skank. A few years ago, she was twerking. Now, if that doesn't ring much of a bell with you, twerking was rubbing her bottom against the crotch of, I believe it was, a Negro singer on stage in a performance. I mean, like, just spontaneously. She has appeared in nude photos. She's desecrated her body with ridiculous-looking tattoos, and then back in 2016, she pompously announced that if Donald Trump was elected president, she would leave the United States. Well, for better or for worse, she's still there. That's Miley Cyrus. It's too bad because her father, I've seen him in a couple of things. Now, back in the 80s, he had this long mullet haircut, and one of his, probably his most famous song was Achy Breaky Heart. I guess you can take it or leave it. But Miley Cyrus, Billy Ray Cyrus, I saw him as an announcer or sort of host of a program maybe a year ago or so. And I was actually quite impressed. He was talking about how in Appalachia what was once the moonshiners had kind of morphed into they were now in many cases growing marijuana, and this independent spirit of Appalachia was kind of part and parcel of that. And while I'm not a great fan of marijuana or growing marijuana or that type of thing, there was a certain tone of appreciation for the independent spirit of the mountain people of Appalachia. I kind of like that. Well, anyway, you've got to say that, and I know children are not all, you know, don't always take the direction of their parents, but she must be, Miley Cyrus must be a particularly harsh burden for her parents to bear. She is, really a bit of a disgrace. Anyway, I guess enough said about Miley Cyrus. One of the not very well known facts about Africa is, and I saw this when on my visit to the two fact-finding visits to South Africa, is the the major inroads made by communist China. In fact, they are renting or buying up tracts of land to actually help solve their food problem. Instead of importing food, they will grow it themselves in parts of Africa. They then build some infrastructure like roads and so on, make the local governments dependent on them, or then pull other things like lend the local black governments money, which they can't repay, and they are beholden to them. So it really is imperialism. And what I found out when I was in Southwest Africa, which is now called Namibia, was many of the local blacks deeply resent them. At first there was a kind of a racist preference for the Chinese. Oh, well, at least they're not white. Well, they quickly found out that the red Chinese are not governed by quaint ideas like fairness and Christian morality, and that they tend to be very harsh employers or simply decide that the blacks are useless and bring in their own labor. Well, here is something that was sent my way by Jan Lamprecht, who's in South Africa. Chinese is entitled Chinese Colonizing Africa. Here are a couple of the comments. The Chinese communists are now farming in former Rhodesia, now Zimbabwe. The communist Chinese will want to farm the white farms with their own labor, machinery, wells, canals, construction, etc. And the owners will be black Africans in a communist share agreement whereby the blacks don't have to do anything except reap money and send their kids to school. It plays well for the Chai Coms, or Chinese communists, long-range goals, short-term. Exported labor, so they send some of their workers over there, fertilizer and all other exports, and plays well for black Africans getting something for nothing and living in good housing with nearby schooling, part of the deal. So no chaos or anarchy coming anytime soon for the commies, just changing the guard from old whites to young Chai Coms. It looks like a great deal for black South Africa. And another comments, the Chinese have been very active in Africa since the 1960s. They were in Tanzania setting up training farms for black communist terrorists. Then they infiltrated and fought the Portuguese in Mozambique. Now, the Chinese did many things, including building the Tanzam, that's the Tanzania to Zambia railway, to get the blacks to be dependent to get the blacks to be independent of whites to the south of them. The Tanzam railway was largely a failure. The only country where the Chinese played a major role in successfully overthrowing government was the setting up of Robert Mugabe in former Rhodesia. With the pathetic, spineless, worthless Margaret Thatcher just letting it happen. The British wouldn't know what a principle was if it came and kicked them in the face. There were some Chinese in Africa, but they've come and gone. They don't have the determination and stamina to survive in Africa. So these are mostly just people who come fairly briefly. Things don't work so well for the Asians in Africa, I assure you. Whites are the best by far when it came to making a success in backward Africa. Nobody else can come close to it. The Chinese are nothing. The Russians, on the other hand, were far tougher, but they're white. That was in Angola. The Chinese, easy meat. They don't worry me except that they might sell weaponry to the black terrorist types. That would cause them a problem. So these are some comments from about the very considerable Chinese economic presence in Africa. Here's a good news. You know, leadership counts. Brazil's new president, Jair Bolsonaro, is going to eliminate transgender pro-ideology from the schools. Well, like, a big hurrah for that. This is a LifeSite News reports. Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro announced plans to revise school textbooks in public schools and eliminate references to homosexuality, same-sex marriage, and violence against women. There are also proposals to give the military control of some public schools. Once Bolsonaro took office, the Ministry of Education issued new guidelines for textbook publishers that erase references to gender ideology and sexism. The ministry also eliminated its diversity department. You know, like, good on all fronts. Diversity. Well, diversity is a code word for, that's right, anti-white. And all education systems claim to be strapped for money. That's a given. And I've been involved in education since the late 1960s. And you know, true or not, it's a part of the just the game. You know, we don't have enough money. We need more money. Okay, fair enough. Then why not use the money you do have more prudently? And one of the absolutely utter atrocities are these diversity departments. Why would one want a diversity coordinator or a department? That means, you know, a high-paid person, like we'd be a director of education, a superintendent of education, plus a staff. I mean, you're nobody if you don't have staff. You know, all that expense, it would be okay, wouldn't be so bad if they did nothing, but they do worse than nothing. They're actually subversive. On the eve of his January 1st inauguration, President Bolsonaro tweeted his intentions. One of the goals to get Brazil out of the worst position in international education rankings is to combat the Marxist rubbish that is being spread in the education institutions. Education Minister Ricardo Velas Rodriguez vowed in his inaugural speech to end the aggressive promotion of the gender ideology. Good for them. In a poll published January 8th by Datafolha, 59% of evangelical Christians said they did not approve of sex education being discussed at school. The poll conducted conservative Catholics and evangelical Christians are key supporters of the Bolsonaro government. Bolsonaro is already feeling some pushback from Brazil's teachers' union, unions, who resent the president's opposition to the legacy of leftist Paulo Freire, whose books and philosophy about education have been influential, unfortunately, around the world. Freire, who died in 1997, was a founder of critical pedagogy. His work has been criticized for challenging traditional institutions such as the church and family that intermediate between state and individuals. Critical pedagogy asserts that teaching is inherently political and that the goal of education is political action, social critique. Yeah, not learning to read and write, to work together collaboratively, to know something about your country's history, perhaps to learn another language, to know about science, and so on. No. Education in the madcap world of Paulo Freire is basically about creating revolutions. Is about political action and social critique. During Bolsonaro's presidential campaign last year, he said he wanted to go to the Ministry of Education with a flamethrower to remove Paulo Freire. His ideas. An inspiration for reforming education, Bolsonaro appears to be relying on a U.S.-based Brazilian Olavo de Carvalho, who's known for opposing socialism. In contrast to Frere, who was briefly imprisoned in the 1970s, de Carvalho sees an educational benefit from religious and private schools. In a video on de Carvalho's YouTube channel, he said, "The government does not have to educate anyone. It's the society that has to educate itself." He added that he will fight to the death any proposals that the federal government is the great educator. And, you know, this goes back to some of the principle that's being fought in North America by those involved in home education. And that the first educators are parents, that as their primary responsibility, not the state's. Education Minister Velez Rodriguez has said that not only schools but family and church are threatened by what he calls the crazy globalist wave. Last week he denounced his countrymen's misbehavior while traveling outside of the country, telling Veja magazine, "Our kids and teenagers must receive citizenship education, which teaches them how to act accordingly, according to the law and morality." Velez told the newspaper Folha de São Paulo that the education ministry is encouraging local officials to allow the police or military to operate their schools. Currently, the country has 13 schools run by the military that are intended for the children of soldiers. Military-run schools accepted some non-military children on the basis of merit and have a reputation for being better than public schools. Well, I bet one of the reasons is they probably stress discipline. Bolsonaro got a boost from the powerful businessman Sergio Borriello, who told the newspaper Folha de São Paulo, "I think maybe Brazil needs a little less ideology and more pragmatism going forward. Employment is more important. The livelihood of various social classes is more important than the president's position on homosexuals." Brazil ranked 63rd of the 72 countries and regions in the 2015 program for international student assessment, conducted by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, or the OECD. According to the group, Brazil has one of the largest shares of adults without secondary education. Schools are overcrowded, teacher salaries are low, and the school buildings are often crumbling. So, a system seriously in need of reform. One starts with important things like getting rid of the whole transgender nonsense. Received distressing news today about a longtime friend of mine, Mark Lemire. Now, Mark Lemire was the webmaster for Ernst Zindel's Zindel site. He assisted with that. He had his own site called the Freedom Site, and he started in Canada, I believe, in 1995, 1 year after Don Black started Stormfront. And in the early days, it was by today's standards, you know, very, very primitive, but a place where you could post ideas, first really discussion boards. And over the years, it promoted freedom, and it carried a great deal of good material. Mark is a very gifted IT person, for years, the Freedom site was a host to a lot of very, very good material. When it started in 1995, it was called a bulletin board, and by today's standards, very simple. Those were the days before such things as being able to have podcasts or videos or audio. I mean, that would be several years or maybe a decade in the future. The growth in this technology is just amazing. Well, Mark Lemire played a very key role in that for many years. However, as he moved into his 30s, Mark had to put more effort with a growing family into earning a living, and he got a job. He's very, very well regarded in IT, in the construction of systems. Not so much in web page building, but in the construction of systems. So he got a job, I believe, in 2005 with the city of Hamilton, which is actually where I live now, and was had a very senior position and was very well regarded. Well, from time to time, he kept a very low profile. From time to time, though, it would get out that he worked for the city of Hamilton. Sometime last year, though, his employment became a major hobby horse of the far, the extreme left, of the Antifa, and they wanted his job. This outrageous individual named Green, although Green's actually black, was a one-term councillor. This Matthew Green. Well, anyway, he was no longer on council, but when the story broke early this year, he was boo-hoo-hooing about, he was so afraid, even though he was no longer on council, that Mark Lemire would have accessed his personal information, and he might be in danger, and so on. All of this just the most egregious nonsense. Anyway, the cowardly city of Hamilton, instead of basically saying, look, he does good work, he's employed to do that, what he does on his own time or did on his own time in the past is his business, so buzz off. Well, principles are hard to find. On May 8th, Mark was suspended with pay from his job while the city hired two outside firms to investigate his work computers, his history on those computers, and I believe his cell phone. Now, I was told that the cost of that investigation would be colossal. I mean, we're not talking about looking at what happened a day or two. This it presumably would go back over his employment of almost 15 years. Well, they concluded their investigation, and as you might expect, lo and behold, found that he had never misused his position or misused the computers at work. In other words, he's a good employee. There could, of course, continue to be a great deal of pressure on the city to do something. Now, I don't have the details yet, because I suspect they're subject to a confidential agreement, but I am going to try to find out more. But Mark resigned today in a mutual agreement with the city. Now, you don't have to be Sherlock Holmes to know that a mutual agreement, that he would have almost no reason to resign unless there was a severance package, which isn't quite as bad as being fired. I have no idea what that package would be. But the reality is, he is out of a good job, a government job with a pension, a job that he presumably wished to hold until retirement. Out because of the absolute satanic malignance of the anti-racist movement. A online publication called Vice, even though it has nothing to do with sex or drugs or anything like that, it has everything to do with smearing patriots. And that absolutely never-ending meddler Richard Warman. A few weeks ago, Richard Warman sent a long letter to the city of Hamilton, urging them to fire him, and making reference to some posts that had been on the over the years on Mark Lemire's Freedom Summit, including what Warman considers Holocaust denial. A principled employer would simply say, Mr. Lemire has the right to his political views on his own time off work. Doesn't have the right to preach politics at work, but I'm sure Mr. Mark Lemire never did. But he has the same right, or should have the same right, as any other citizen. And you may not like his views, but we don't hire him for his views. We hire him for his skills as an internet technician. Now, that is the sort of principled behavior one might expect. I'll put it a little differently. One might hope for. Expect nowadays is perhaps too much. Hope for, though. Unfortunately, the city of Hamilton did not do that. They knuckled under, and there are still some details where waiting to find out. This is the CBC report. Mark Lemire and city mutually agreed to end his employment following the investigation. The city says there was no evidence that Mark Lemire inappropriately accessed data or private information. The city of Toronto and a worker with ties to white supremacist activities and groups, of course, that's the Communist Broadcasting Corporation's take, I would say white nationalists, and have mutually agreed to end his employment in the city's IT department. City manager Jeanette Smith said today, investigations by outside agencies found no evidence Lemire inappropriately accessed any data or private information. But Lemire's off-duty activities and associations did not reflect the culture, values, and beliefs of the city, she said. The current collection of political hacks at the city. But do they does a person's private views have to reflect the views of the city? The alleged views of the city. In other words, do you have to be a card-carrying, a cultural Marxist to be able to have a job? Well, wait a sec. We all pay taxes to the city. We all contribute to this thing. Why should certain political views held on one's own time cause you to be under pressure? CBC speculates or wonders. The only questions were the nature and details of his departure. And the city manager wouldn't answer that question. Some more information. We're just restating this, but I think it's very important. There was, however, no evidence that Mr. Lemire inappropriately accessed, utilized, or gathered any data, including city emails or private information, or that he inappropriately used any city equipment. In other words, he did his work as he was supposed to do. He's being let go. Lemire's employment became one flashpoint amid other issues, including violence at a LGBT festival, clashes between yellow vest protesters and counter demonstrators outside of City Hall, and criticisms of the reaction of police and civic leaders. So they're really looking for a scapegoat. Not that Mark Lemire had anything to do with the yellow vest protests kerfuffle at the LGBTQ thing. Lemire also maintained a website he characterized recently as a free speech site. He called it an archive, although an internet search revealed it was modified as recently as January. Ottawa lawyer Richard Warman sent screenshots of pages of Holocaust denial material that he says was still on the site in May. The website now seems to be inactive. Mark was an activist in the Heritage Front and fought a long battle with the said enemy of free speech, Richard Warman, who Warman complained against him to the Canadian Human Rights Commission in the bad old days of Section 13 of the Canadian Human Rights Act. And at that time, Mark Lemire and his brilliant lawyer, Barbara Kolaschka, basically beat Warman almost to a standstill and got the tribunal member or judge in the case to refuse to apply the law because he believed that that it was unconstitutional. That, you know, that basically didn't allow any defense. So Mark is a real hero in battling for free speech. Other reactions here. Kojo Dempte, interim executive director of the Hamilton Center for Civic Inclusion, said Lemire's departure was a minimal step. He wants to know more, including how the city looked at information accessed. It would take a person with something of a sense of irony to read that sentence. Kojo Dempte, interim executive director for the Hamilton Center for Civic Inclusion, said Lemire's departure was a minimal step. So the Center for Inclusion wouldn't want a Mark Lemire included. This is the diabolical sophistry of inclusion. If your company is committed to inclusion, you've got to realize that does not mean you. They don't want more white people. A company that signs on to inclusion wants to exclude you. It's only for minorities. And of course, the report visits other gets opinions from various other people, but. I hope that whatever settlement it was good for Mark. Nonetheless, something we have to put out there is that we will remember that the reign of terror of these cultural Marxists, these anti-racists, and the people who collaborated with them. And their day will come. And I want to say this very deliberately. I'm not making empty threats or wild threats about, you know, boom, boom, and things like that. But their day will come, and we will remember. I hope the day comes when a patriotic government is in place and the people who has tried to get Mr. Lemire's job and the job of many other good people for their nonviolent promotion of their political views will suffer maybe severe economic consequences in the form of lawsuits, perhaps jail. What they have done to many patriots has to be avenged. I say this, talked about nonviolent vengeance, but let's not forget what was done to good people by evil people, by people who babbling about nonsense like inclusion, labor to exclude somebody whose views they don't agree with. And you see, theirs is a terribly totalitarian little world. You know, if you don't go along with the agenda, they want you destroyed. Plain and simple. They want you destroyed, not criticized. It's no longer a matter of arguing with somebody. disagreeing with them. If you do not fit our cultural Marxist agenda, you must be destroyed. That's the war we're in, and make no bones about it. Be in no doubt, we are in a war. Now, I urge people to remember that. And when you hear some well-meaning fool say, you know, we live in a free country, laugh at them and say, you think so? You think so? Do you really believe that? You know, that's like believing in the tooth fairy. The only difference is the tooth fairy's harmless. Live in a free country? No, you don't. We live in a very narrow-minded, stuffy, cultural Marxist dictatorship. And this is something that not only has to be fought, but I strongly emphasize remembered. We will not forget what was done to people like Mark Lemire and many, many other people who suffered. You know, I lost my job because of my political beliefs. Not that I was ever teaching those in the classroom. People like this gentle Buddhist videographer, Brian Rue, go on his YouTube. YouTube, Brian Rue, great, great. Like almost 2,000 great videos. Anyway, Brian Rue was driven out of every job he had. He had a number of contracts to teach either meditation or Buddhism in a number of community centers around Vancouver. Harry Abrams of B'nai B'rith made it his task to go after him, to go after and complain and intimidate these gutless, disgusting employers. And Brian was driven out of every job he had. These people, and I'm not exaggerating, are martyrs for freedom. Well, this is Paul from the Journal, fighting side of me, here on White Resistance Radio. I'm going to tell you to play some songs here from a CD about called Ulster Scots Folk Music, and you'll probably recognize a number of these tunes. At least I hope you do. This is part of our heritage, and the Ulster Scots particularly settled in Appalachia. So this is part of the music of the Ulster brought over from Northern Ireland.
Three black balls whenever we shop. Give me an Ulster boy who knows how to walk. Give me an Ulster boy who knows how to talk. Give me an Ulster boy who beats his drum. For at least you know where he comes from. All over this world you could find a man to give you sweet loving as best he can. All over this world you could find a lad to love you through the good and the bad. There are sailor boys on the seven seas, lumberjacks up in their trees, film stars in their flashboard cars, and astronauts on their way to Mars. Give me an Ulster boy who knows how to walk. Give me an Ulster boy who knows how to talk. Give me an Ulster boy who beats his drum. For at least you know where he comes from. There are men over in Paris, France, who know all about sweet romance. They know how to wine and how to dine, how to make a woman feel oh so fine. The all-American boy with his big hat, with his big wallet and his big chat, he knows how to live the real good life. You could be his fine little wife. Give me an Ulster boy who knows how to walk. Give me an Give me an Ulster boy who beats his drum. For at least you know where he comes from. There are men in India and Pakistan, men in China and Japan, men in Brazil and Peru. They know what to do, let me tell you. All over this world you could find
few in fields all alone. Down by the banks of Knockaren, where beauty and pleasure were known, I spied a fair maid at her labors, which caused me to stay for a while. And I thought of her goddess of beauty, that blooming bright star of Bright Isle. I humbled myself to her beauty, fair maiden, where do you belong? Are you from heaven descended, abiding in Cupid's fair throne? Young man, I will tell you a secret. It's true, I'm a maid that is poor. And to part from my vows and my promise is more than my heart can endure. Therefore, I'll remain at my service and go through all my hardships and toil, and wait for the lad that has left me all alone on the banks of Fair Isle. Young maiden, I wish not to banter, 'tis true I come here in disguise. I came here to fulfill my last promise and hoped to give you a surprise. All I know is you're a maid I love dearly, and you've been in my heart all the while. For me, there is no other damsel than my blooming bright star of Fair Isle. For me, there is no other damsel than my blooming bright star of Fair Isle.
Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on White Resistance Radio. com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show's repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.